Hey, this is Matt, host of SQLcast Special. I want to point out our theme song is by Mark with a C. Check out his albums, markwithac.com. This very special episode, it'll start with me talking with special guest Paul Goebel, and then afterwards, Thrasher and Jersey Jason also talk about the topic at hand. Enjoy.
Everybody across the land, here's a special from SQLcast, though I don't know what it's gonna be about. Maybe Woody Allen, maybe Spike Lee, maybe Technicolor, maybe 3D, or maybe he just gotta wait and see. Cause you're gonna find out after this theme. This SQLcast special is a go. This SQLcast special is a go.
Hello and welcome to the SQLcast Special. This is a podcast about whatever I damn well please. It's pretty irregular, but this time around, we're looking at the career of someone that was not just an actor. He was a stand-up comedian and, by all accounts, a very good person. He starred in such well-remembered films as Patch Adams and Jacob the Liar. I'm talking about Robin Williams, and with me I have a friend of the show, Paul Goebel.
Hello.
Yeah, Paul Goebel does some podcasts himself. He does Hey, Watch This, and he also, which is on TV, he also has a podcast, Brief Interviews with the Opposite Sex.
Yeah, I do Hey, Watch This with our friend David Bax.
Right.
We talk about different shows every week. And then Brief Interviews with the Opposite Sex is where I just interview female friends of mine about different women's issues, mostly as an effort to educate myself more than anything else.
And would you say doing that show has changed your approach to like how women are portrayed in media? Or,
Well, yeah, I mean, that was a big part of it because I have two daughters. They're 13 and 15 now, and so... it took, you know, I interviewed comedians and some actresses, you know, a couple porn stars. So most people, who were, most of the women on the show were used to being looked at one way or another. And so, yeah, I got a lot of insight into the way they, you know, the way they are, the way they feel that they are, you know, they appear to society. You know what I mean? Just the kind of stuff that guys can't really ever understand completely.
Right. I mean, something my wife brings up all the time is she likes video games a lot, but she doesn't like how you can't play as a woman in a video game very much.
Right.
Or if it is, it's one where you get to, like, you have to design the character, which is fine, but unlike maybe, like, Tomb Raider or something, there's very few video games out there, even still, written with a female protagonist.
You're right. And then when it is, like, you know, obviously the people at Nintendo eventually said, hey, let's let girls play as Princess Peach.
Who right.
Princess Peach.
Sure.
You know, why don't you make a cool character who's like Mario, but who's a girl? There's an idea. You know?
That yeah, yeah.
It's rare. She makes a good point.
Definitely. But so we're here to talk about Robin Williams. You know, I was lucky enough to catch him on his stand-up comedy tour he did, I think, a little bit less than 10 years ago. It was to prep for his HBO comedy special. I think it was called, like, Weapons of Self-Destruction.
Uh-huh.
And it just seeing him on stage live, I think, was a real treat for me. I didn't have really good seats. I sat in the rafters. I had to whip out my binoculars. But he had such an energy, and he didn't have to use a microphone. He could really project his voice, and he drank 10 bottles of water. He used some of them as props, but, I mean, just the amount of energy that man had was just amazing.
Yeah, and, you know, and it's one of the things that you learn about him, you know, sadly after he's gone, is that he so much wanted people to be happy and wanted to please the folks around him. you know, and just wanted everybody to be comfortable around him. And his performing was such a big part of that. He wanted to make sure every single person there had a good time.
Definitely. Now, have you seen him on stage or met him in person?
I met him once. I never saw him perform live, but it's, you know, it's funny at seeing all the posts by people who have met him. It's all, in the end, it's all the same story. He was very kind. He was very polite.
Right.
Kind of, you know, and he made you feel special. It was a brief thing. He was in town making a movie, and he had been kind of making the rounds comedy-wise. Because his family wasn't here. He was kind of here all by himself. And so he would like, and I guess he was staying in Silver Lake, so he kept showing up at the UCB a lot. And then, and that was like a historic thing. He actually showed up and did time on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he showed up and they just happened to be doing a stand-up show and he asked to do it. And he did this show it was called Garage Comedy. Which was like an alternative, a weird alternative show, and they happened to be doing it at UCB that night. So he got to know the people who were running it, and then he went to their other show that they do on a weekly basis, and I happened to be performing on that show that night. So, and he was there, and, you know, I took the opportunity to introduce myself, and I told him that I was doing, that was back when I was doing my show at the UCB, the King of TV show, and it was a big night because I had Andy Richter and Danny Bonaducci coming on, and the people from Breaking Bonaducci were going to be there, and so I was like, hey, if you could come see my show, it's going to be a lot of fun, you know, if you're not doing anything. And I said, I have Andy Richter and Danny Bonaducci, and he goes, oh shit. And that made me kind of laugh that he said, like, he felt he had to comment at all or react at all. Made me laugh. But I said, you know, if he could come by, and he's like, oh, I think I'm working that night, but if they change the schedule, I'll definitely come. And I said, okay, well, and I didn't want to bug him, of course, so that was it. And he hung out for a little while, and then he left, but he didn't show up to the show because I assume he had to work, or maybe he found something better to do. But in any case, he didn't blow me off. You know, he was very polite. And I've always said, you know, one time a long time ago, someone asked me, why do we want to be famous? What do we get out of it? And you know, as performers. And I just thought, you know, and at the time I was on TV, this was back when I was on Beat the Geeks, so people would recognize me quite a bit. And I said, you know, what I get out of it is when people recognize me and want to meet me and shake my hand and stuff like that, it makes me feel, obviously it's a nice stroke to the ego, of course, but more importantly, it makes me feel good that I have an opportunity to make this person feel good or special, or just that they did something neat that day, you know, and I can say, yes, nice to meet you, glad you'll enjoy the show, and take a picture and do all that shit. And so they walk away thinking, well, that was kind of nice. That guy in that show was polite to me. And then hopefully, you know, they pay it forward and the world becomes a better place and we all hold hands and everything's great. I mean, that's the way I like to think it happened. But that's exactly what he did. You know, he was very nice to me, very kind and polite. And it's, you know, so crazy. That's what everybody says about him. They, you know, and like specific stories where, like, you know, he made me feel very special about this and that. And he saw my work and commented on it. And, you know, it's amazing that a guy, you know, obviously he had plenty of problems, but he, you know, is at the top of his game in so many ways. Sure, he's made plenty of bad movies, and we've all made fun of him for seeing him do the same improv over and over again. But when you consider that in terms of sitcoms, he had one of the most popular sitcoms of all time and one of the most memorable characters on TV of all time. Here, 30 years later, people still reference it and you know, show pictures of it on the internet. In terms of dramatic acting, he won an Oscar for not just for, you know, being good in a movie, but being great in a great movie. You know, that's a big deal. And all the other dramatic acting he's done. And then he is an amazing stand-up comedian. Again, say what you want about his improv skills or, you know, the wells that he goes too often. The first time you watched him do stand-up comedy or watch one of his comedy specials, you were floored. I don't care who you were, because he does it so well. And like you saw firsthand, he did it, you know, so well and made sure he put on a great show for everybody. You know, whether there's cameras there or not, he made sure everybody got a great show. So, I mean, just in terms of those arenas right there, the guy was one of the best there ever was. You know, luckily we have records of it to look at for, you know, for years to come. But you have to recognize his talent and, you know, the fact that his talent and his hard work got him so far. It's, you know, it's undeniable. It's the bottom line.
Certainly. I mean, he studied at Juilliard with Christopher Reeve. And I have to say there's very few, not just comedians, but actors that can both do comedy and drama and be successful at it. And then even later in his, I mean, in most of the movies he did, he made pretty bold choices and made a lot of real independent films. I'm thinking specifically of One Hour Photo, which was
brilliant.
A terrifying movie where he sort of had a run of movies where he kind of was playing like bad guys or serial killers between
Insomnia,
that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah. 1 Hour Photo,
so great in those
things.
And well, he even remember early on in his career, this is when I was in college, but he one of his first serious roles was in Dead Again, the Kenneth Branagh movie.
It's funny you mentioned that movie scared the crap out of my sister. My family showed it to us because they thought it's okay because Robin Williams was in it. And I was like, my sister and I were in like first or second grade. And the movie is something with people getting stabbed in the eyes with scissors. And it has some timeline of like in the past and in the present. I don't remember it very well, but Robin Williams was in it.
Yeah.
And
well, and the bottom line is, it's not a comedy.
No, it's not.
So why are you showing it to your children? I don't care what the movie's about. You know what? This isn't a comedy. This isn't Mrs. Doubtfire.
Exactly. No, and this was, you know, directed and starring Kenneth Branagh, one of the earlier films he directed that wasn't related to Shakespeare.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know what my parents were thinking with that one, but my sister still this day talks about the scissors.
That's hilarious. Yeah, because it is a scary movie. You know, the big Kenneth Branagh and his wife Emma Thompson and Derek Jacobi is in it, a great English actor.
Ah, right. Yeah.
At the end, you know, it's kind of a mystery, and so at the end, when the reveal comes, it's really good and powerful, and it is kind of like holy shit. And then all of a sudden, he's got the scissors. I remember seeing it in the theater, going, "Wow, this is a good thriller." That's what it is. It's
right.
A thriller. Like old-style Jimmy Stewart kind. But Robin Williams just has a small part, one scene, I think, and he's barely even credited, but he's really good, and, you know, he's not funny at all. And I remember at the time thinking, wow, that was a bold choice, because that was back before, you know, the days of Paul Rudd and Bill Ferrell and, you know, guys taking smaller roles in movies and being super funny. You know, movie stars didn't do that back then. And to take that one scene and be really good in it, it wasn't a cameo. It wasn't some, you know, stunt to get people to see it. It was just a small part. Kenneth Branagh asked him to do it. He said, yeah, I'll do it. And he continued to do that in his career. So many, like, small roles in films and even, like, uncredited stuff, you know, on TV or in voiceover work, stuff like that, video games. He just looks at it and goes, yeah, this is fun. And honestly, people like Paul Rudd owe him a debt of gratitude because they made it okay. He made it okay to do that kind of stuff. It's not like you're slumming if you're doing a voice on a video game anymore.
I'm trying to think of a modern actor that has sort of mixed into some dramatic stuff with comedic work, and I'm thinking of Patton Oswalt.
Right.
It had a smaller part that, you know, could have been a part that Robin Williams could have played in, oh shit, it was written by Diablo Cody and it starred Charlize Theron.
Oh yeah. What, Young Adult?
Young Adult, that's it, right. And Patton Oswalt has a supporting part in that. That's pretty good.
That's very good.
Yeah.
And also in that football movie, I want to call, say The Fan, but that's not what it was called.
No, but it's like The Fan. It's with the obsessed guy. Yeah,
yeah, he's obsessed with this football player. And that movie, again, not funny at all.
No.
But Patton Oswalt is brilliant in it. And, and you know, it's Jack Black is the same way. You know, the difference in paycheck that Patton Oswalt got for a young adult and the paycheck he got for Ratatouille.
Right.
Astronomical.
Absolutely.
You know, same with Jack Black. The difference in the paycheck he got for doing Bernie that he got for doing Kung Fu Panda 1 and 2, and I hear there's going to be a 3.
Sure.
I mean, you know, that there's not enough numbers made to show how huge that difference is. But Robin Williams made it okay to do that kind of stuff. And then even, especially with voiceover with animation, you know, he was the first, when, you know, name me the three biggest names in Beauty and the Beast is like, you know, it's, what's her name? Angela Lansbury is probably one of the biggest ones. And Jerry Orbach, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then you come to Aladdin, and all of a sudden it stars Robin Williams, who's a big name, and he does a brilliant performance. Like, people go to see it because it's Robin Williams as the genie. You know, all of a sudden, guess what? Now Tim Allen and Tom Hanks and Billy Crystal and all these big stars who are really funny are doing these great performances in films. All because of Robin Williams, and he opened that door and made it okay.
Right, because like in Beauty and the Beast and A Little Mermaid as well, for the most part, they were using Broadway actors to do the voices of those leads. And
Beauty and the Beast is a perfect example. I mean, we all know Jerry Orbach and Angela Lansbury from TV, but you know, they were on Broadway. Mm-hmm. They're Broadway actors who can sing and, you know, and do voices. You know, when they cast Robin Williams to do the genie, they didn't say, we need you to sound like a genie from the East.
Right.
They wanted Robin Williams, and they continued that brilliance. Like I said, Billy Crystal, Patton Oswalt, Dane Cook, for Christ's sakes.
I don't know. The Planes movies? Yeah.
They ran out of people, or maybe they just matched the level of comedian with the level of animated film. But regardless, if Robin Williams hadn't been the genie, Dane Cook certainly wouldn't be the plane.
Yeah, you know, I think in Planes they had like 2 tuna sandwiches left in their budget, and maybe maybe Dane Cook said, "Hey, I'll do that." But no, you're right. I mean, the genie as Aladdin is like the first big example of we're going to have a big movie star do a voice for a cartoon, and he actually did like a great performance. It wasn't like Brad Pitt phoning it in,
in Sinbad,
yeah, or Kenneth Branagh, speaking of him, you know, for that matter, phoning it in Road to El Dorado. I mean, no one remembers that movie. But Aladdin, it was just such a big thing. I mean, that was, you know, as a kid, I went to a bunch of these. I was born in 82, so I sort of got a chance to go to these Disney movies in the theater as a kid when Disney was kind of having their renaissance.
Right.
And Aladdin, I think, was the first one I remember going to where the parents laughed just as much as the kids. Because of all the Robin Williams material.
Yeah, and remember how blown away we all were when we heard that, you know, he ad-libbed most of his dialogue and they animated around him. We were all like, oh my God, that's amazing. Now, that's the way it's done. You bring in
exactly,
you know, really smart, funny people like Jim Carrey to do a voice in your movie, and the animators come in and watch him and see the things he does and says, and then they go back and put that in the script or make his character match what he's saying. Again, he was the first guy to do that.
One interesting film Robin Williams did that I don't think many people might have seen is one that at the time was a bit of a flop, but it's What Dreams May Come.
Yeah.
It's very difficult subject matter.
Yeah, but it's pretty hardcore because it's about suicide and, you know, obviously awfully coincidental. But it's really beautiful. I mean, I wasn't crazy about the movie just because I didn't think the script was so great, but it certainly was amazing to look at. And and the performances are really good. It's you know, it's basically this man on a journey, and he kind of runs the gamut, you know, in terms of acting. He's, you know, he's happy, he's sad, he's excited. It's really like a one-man show.
It's almost more like watching a stage play in some respects.
It's a stage play, but with this really incredible scenery.
Yeah, because the stuff I haven't seen it God, in a while, but Cuba Gooding Jr., like when that sort of reveal comes with his character at the end,
right?
It's a bit dopey, but you know, the last time I saw What Dreams May Come, it was when I was in college with my girlfriend at the time, and she had a history of 2 suicide attempts. So watching that movie with someone with that kind of a history, their reaction to it was extremely intense and personal.
I bet it was. Yeah.
So, and I don't know how soon I can revisit that film, but I think it's interesting. It shows that he was trying different stuff. I mean, yes, he did a lot of family films that weren't the greatest, but you know, they paid the bills and they let him do other things. And I think he generally liked making family films. I mean, whether it was Steven Spielberg's Hook or, you know, what, Father's Day, which is a thing with him and Billy Crystal.
Yeah.
That, I was listening, the director of that, Ivan Reitman, who also did Ghostbusters, of course, I think was on the WTF podcast with Marc Maron, and mentioned on Father's Day, they had Robin Williams, Billy Crystal, the studio wanted to rush it out. They had no real script for the film. So they just told him to riff the entire time.
Yeah, that makes sense, because there's this really long scene where Robin Williams is practicing to meet his son, and he's talking to him in the mirror, and it's like one of those Dress to Impress montages. You know, he's putting on different hats and
pretending
to be different guys, and it's you know, the epitome of a bad scene in a bad movie. It's exactly what they're making fun of in They Came Together, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But there are a couple of scenes that are funny in that movie. I mean, when you look at a guy who made so many movies, of course some of them are going to be bad.
Yes, right.
You know, everybody makes horrible choices. The fact that he was in Hook with Steven Spielberg, I don't think that movie is very good. I don't think the performances are great. It's, you know, as far... But even Steven Spielberg, you know, has made a few movies that aren't very good, or some might say just plain bad.
You can see why they cast Robin Williams in something like Hook, though. As a grown-up Peter Pan, I mean, that part of it makes sense, but...
And a lot of it, it's certainly ambitious, and I'm sure on paper, the movie looked amazing. Julie Roberts is Tinkerbell, and Dustin Hoffman is Captain Hook, and he's killed the alligator, and he keeps him as a trophy, and all this cool stuff. You're like, yeah, this is amazing. And then, you know, you look at the sets and the costumes. Of course, the problem is it just doesn't come together. And again, not everybody can do that 100% of the time. So, okay, it's not so great. But you know, when you have such high highs in your career, you're going to have some low lows. And yes, you know, you're an easy target, so you're going to get made fun of. But, you know, I think the fact all this outpouring from his fans and from people who are really shook up about his death shows really, you know, how he was viewed in the public eye. You know, people wanted his stuff to be good. You know, when another Robin Williams movie came out, people were like, okay, is this another Old Dogs, or is it another Good Will Hunting? Which movie is it? You know, and even if it's another Old Dogs, you know what you're going to get. Okay, this looks dumb, but let's go see it to see what Robin Williams does. You know, and in some cases, you're like, wow, it was so terrible. But then you say, well, that was exactly what I expected. And then, you know, he shows up on a sitcom, like, or even on a drama when he did that episode of Law & Order SVU, or that episode of Homicide he did.
Right.
You know, those weren't funny at all. That was some great acting, you know, Emmy worthy acting. So, you know, he shows up and does stuff like that. And to be honest, that takes a lot of courage to be able to do stuff and, you know, and know that people are going to, you know, be waiting to take you apart if they don't like it. You know, and even now we've seen the haters on Facebook and Twitter who just want to get attention. Those people will always be around, but you know, I think we've seen the majority of people in the world that were, you know, very moved by this. Not just that we lost someone who, you know, was gave us such great memories, but that he, you know, in the end had such a tragic story. You know, I think a lot of people obviously were affected by this.
Yeah, I did read that he was very hurt that his sitcom The Crazy Ones was not renewed for a second season. And while it was interesting to see him on TV again, that show didn't exactly work.
Right.
And I, you know, had that show been exactly the same and had it been on in the 90s, I'm convinced it would have been a smashed hit.
Yeah, well, there's, you know, obviously David and I talked about this show.
Right.
On Hey Watch This at length. I only watched two episodes. I watched the first episode, maybe I watched three. I watched the first two episodes, and then I watched the one that Pam Dauber was on because I wanted to see the Morgan Mindy reunion. But there were a lot of problems with the show, but quite honestly, he was none of them. You know,
sure.
The fact that they cast Sarah Michelle Gellar as his daughter was such a bad idea because she is so painfully unfunny. And to put her up against one of the funniest people in history, that was a huge mistake. I was never a fan of Hamish Linklater, so that, you know, he didn't thrill me. And then just the whole style of the show, you know, it was a sitcom shot. Like it was like Ally McBeal. You know, like you said, if this show was on when Ally McBeal was on, it would have been perfect. Put
right.
This Ally McBeal, you know, next to each other, stretch it out to an hour, make it a dramedy, boom. But unfortunately, people are not down with this. But then again, same thing happened to Michael J. Fox.
Oh, yeah, sure. That's
so
right.
So it's not, again, why are you blaming Robin Williams? You know, Michael J. Fox, one of the most beloved and successful sitcom stars in the history of the medium.
Yes.
His show didn't last as long as The Crazy Ones did. At least The Crazy Ones went for an entire season. You know, so it doesn't happen. It was a big deal for him to come back to TV anyways. And again, every story I've heard about anybody who worked on that show, that all they can talk about is how cool he was, how fun he was, how he kept things light on the set. He never, you know, complained. He was the coolest guy ever. So, you know, even that is, I think, a legacy to be proud of.
I'm just glad I got some exposure to him on TV in Mork and Mindy, because Nickelodeon used to have Nick at Night.
Sure.
Where they'd show the classic shows like Dick Van Dyke, and Mork and Mindy, I guess, was one of the more recent ones they had on there. And I guess it's its own, Nick at Night is its own channel pretty much now. But
yeah, they've stopped showing reruns now, and TV Land has stopped showing as many reruns as well. A lot of the TV Land stuff is from the late 80s and 90s now, unfortunately, so it is of no interest to me.
Oh, so like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and,
yeah,
and that sort of thing?
Yeah, Everybody Loves Raymond shows
oh,
that
boy.
I
okay.
watched when they were on, so they're not really nostalgia for me. You know, that was those were done. But, yeah, watching old sitcoms like Mork and Mindy and Happy Days, Welcome Back, Kotter, stuff from the, you know, the 70s like that, that's really when the sitcom, you know, took off, when Gary Marshall and guys like that used the medium for what it could be. And, you know, you had big stars like Robin Williams and, you know, Henry Winkler was a huge star back then, and people who could really use TV. You know, they did stuff on those shows that they stretched it out into a movie, it would be horrible. But you got to see these half-hour plays that were really funny with these funny, interesting characters. And, you know, and obviously sitcoms have matured, but those, I think they still hold up, you know, aside from the clothes and the hair that you kind of have to get past. They the performances and the jokes still hold up, and some of them are, you know, there's this old episode of Mork and Mindy where Mindy interviews Robin Williams because he has his comedy album coming out.
Huh.
And Mork and Robin Williams have a conversation, and it's one of the early glimpses into, you know, how troubled Robin Williams was, because he gives this interview and he really wants it to be good, and he's really nice to Mindy, and And Mork is really mean to him, thinks he's ugly and not funny. And they have a conversation about it. And Robin Williams says, you know, I just want to be liked. And, you know, it's kind of scary to think there are people out there who don't like me. And that's why I do this, so to get them to like me. And Mork then, like, comments, wow, what a sad figure you are. And it's almost surreal because, you know, at some point you realize, oh, shit, this guy's commenting on his own, you know, psychosis and shortcomings. But it's, you know, I've never seen a show do that, do something like that. You know, nowadays, a guy like, you know, Ray Romano or Jerry Seinfeld just plays themselves in their sitcom. And, you know, the shitty stuff that happens to him during the day, they put on the show. You know, it's not really revealing much. It's like, hey, this funny thing happened to me with Kathy Griffin. I'm going to write it into my show. And there you go. I guess it's like really... It's therapy that somebody pays you a lot of money to go to.
Yeah, there's some sitcom that's coming out starring a stand-up comedian. I forget the name of it, but the promos are really obnoxious because it just shows all the guest stars for the first season yelling the character's last name out. And it's like Martin Short and some other people.
Oh, the John Mulaney show?
That's it, right. And they're all saying, Mulaney, 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 Mulaney.
Right. Yeah, and it's supposed to be, I remember a couple, that was on the... I think NBC was developing it a couple seasons ago, and it got a lot of buzz, and then they shot the pilot and passed on it, and a lot of people were like, what happened? But then Fox went ahead and picked it up, and now apparently it's super, super funny. The clips of it are funny. The premise is John Mulaney is the warm-up act for a sitcom.
Oh, okay.
The warm-up guy for a sitcom, which stars Martin Short, so he's his boss, and he wants to be a writer. And Elliot Gould is the old weird guy who lives down the hall from John Mulaney. So it's kind of like it's in the model of Seinfeld in terms of that. So yeah, it's more of that. The only difference is, from all appearances, John Mulaney seems to be a very well put together guy. He seems to have his shit together pretty well, and he's been doing fine so far. So if you see him on talk shows, the guy's very smooth.
Yeah, but check it out.
Who knows? You know, he may have his problems too. Never know.
Well, everybody has their problems.
I guess so. Everybody? Really? Everybody?
A lot of people have problems. I mean, I had a friend on Facebook with Robin Williams passing. They made a point in that, why is it as a society that when it comes to suicide and depression, we talk about it like it only happens to teenagers?
True.
But it's not really talked about with adults, you know, and that it is a big sickness. I don't know what you call it, that a lot of people have, a big state of being that a lot of people have.
You're right.
And men in particular are ashamed to talk about their feelings and taught to repress feelings and bottle everything up.
You know, it affects everybody. There is no, I'm sure there's you know, a certain, I don't know, breed of people that it affects more, just like any disease does. And I'm sure there are some people who are more susceptible to depression. But, yeah, you know, you want to catch it early in teens, obviously, because there's so much else going on with teens that, you know, them just being depressed can easily escalate to worse things, to suicide or whatever.
Right.
Because, you know, teens have so much going on, but it doesn't end there. And also, teen suicide is, of course, just inherently more sad, I think, than when, you know, a 50-year-old man commits suicide. Because everybody says, well, at least he lived to be 50, you know.
That's true, yeah.
Whereas when a teenager does it, they go, gosh, he was so young. So that's inherently sad. But the truth is, it doesn't end. You know, if you are depressed as a teenager, you know, basically you're going to... At best, you're going to spend the rest of your life on some kind of medication and, seeking some sort of therapy. And, you know, you have to deal with that every day. And sometimes it's really a struggle just to get out of bed and do that stuff. And it's sadly, unlike other diseases or conditions, it doesn't present itself so obvious. You know, you're not constantly coughing or vomiting or turning green. Your hair's not falling out. All you're doing is staying in bed all day, and people think you're just lazy. And, you know, you're right. We have to look at that. And then in the case of Robin Williams, when your outer persona is so I don't know, warm and so outgoing, and just people see that, they're like, yeah, he seems fine. What's the problem? You know, I got my own problems to deal with. He seems fine. And the next thing you know, he wasn't fine, and all it would have taken is a phone call. You know, obviously we all have a responsibility to the people in our lives that, you know, that we need to check up on each other once in a while. I guess that's what I'm getting at.
Right. Gee, I mean, just looking over his filmography here in Internet Movie Database, it's just astonishing all the work Robin Williams did.
Yeah, no doubt. There's some great stuff on there, and stuff I guarantee anyone who looks at it sees at least one movie where they go, "Oh yeah, I remember that." You know, I'm looking at it right now, like The Night Listener. I really like that movie. It's based on a really cool book, you know, and it's a true story, really interesting. House of D, it isn't such a great movie, but he's really good in it. His small part is really good, you know. And like we mentioned before, Insomnia, very few people even saw that movie, but he's so good in it and so weird, you know.
Yeah, around that same time, he did a film called The Final Cut, which is a very interesting concept. And that when people, the concept, I guess, is when people die, they take their memories to like a film editor, and they'll edit highlights of their memories and play it at their funerals.
Wow.
And that's what Robin Williams' character does as his job. But someone dies that has, you know, if he might have been part of the mob or something like that, there's some secret that gets revealed, and then Robin Williams is sort of hunted because of that. But and that was with him and Mira Sorvino and Jim Caviezel. But The Final Cut, interesting, sort of different science fiction.
That's cool. I've never even heard of that movie before today.
Yeah, it barely got a theatrical release. It might have played at a few film festivals. It might have been in New York and L.A. for one weekend in one theater. But Toys is a very strange movie.
Yes. Yeah, not very good, but it's interesting to watch. And you know,
the costume design, yeah.
I like to look at it now and see what it's like. I see what they were trying to do here. They didn't do it, but nice try.
It was apparently a passion project for director Barry Levinson.
Right.
And they're able to get it made with Robin Williams attached. And there's a massacre in that film where all these toys are getting shot up with guns.
Yeah.
And there's some general, played by Michael Gambon. Very interesting stuff. I've never seen Moscow on the Hudson, but I've heard he has a good performance in that.
That's great. Again, that was probably his first big dramatic turn. I mean, it's kind of funny, but, you know, he does, you know, he has an accent all the way through it, and it's, you know, it's just a real life story. But again, it's got a great cast because Maria Conchita Alonso is in it, and all these interesting ethnic actors. And it's basically about that, how people come here from other countries, and they, you know, like especially they come to New York, and they find their community, and they mix in, and then they get to know each other. And I thought the scene at the beginning when he defects is really good.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a great performance. I think that might have been his first big dramatic performance. And people thought, what? He's doing it. It was like when Bill Murray did The Razor's Edge, you know?
Yes. I mean, he's another comedic actor that's done a lot of dramatic work.
Yeah, great stuff.
Certainly.
And I guess World According to Garp, too, that was a big departure for him. You know, I remember when that came out, and people who were in love with the book were not happy. They're like, why is Mork playing Garp? You know, the series had only been on for a while, and now he's starring in this movie based on a lot of people's favorite book, but again, is a great movie, and not just because of him. Obviously, it was brilliant performances in it. But he knew enough, you know. Obviously, everybody saw at that point, oh, he can pull back, he can play it, you know, a little more subtle, and you know, and that was just people started giving him the benefit of the doubt at that point.
Yeah, I mean, Awakenings, he's very subtle in.
Yeah.
As the main character is the Doctor. Dead Poets Society, of course, that and Good Will Hunting seems to be what people are quoting the most and all the wonderful things people are writing about him. Yeah, that's right. He was in a Francis Ford Coppola movie, Jack.
Again, that seemed like it was a passion project of Francis Ford Coppola that nobody would make unless Robin Williams was attached. It's not so great, but I give him credit for even attempting that role. It doesn't seem like it's an easy part to play.
I think perhaps one of the better comedies he did later in his career was Death to Smoochie.
Which is actually a very good movie.
Yes.
Not a lot of people saw it. I think some people were confused and thought, like your parents, thought it was a kid's movie.
Maybe, right. I mean, I saw it in a theater with a buddy of mine. I was in college, and there was 10 people in the theater, and 5 walked out in the first 5 minutes because they were so disgusted by the language.
I'm sure, because it's about children's programming, but it's not for children in any way.
And the poster looks like a kid's movie.
Right, yeah. So. I think that was the mistake. But it's got great actors in it. Ed Norton and Robin Williams and Danny DeVito and John Stewart is actually in it. It was one of the last acting gigs he did. But it's a funny and a fun movie. And of course, Good Morning Vietnam, another one.
Right.
I think Good Morning Vietnam was like the perfect blend of Robin Williams. You know, they literally gave him time, just set up the camera and said go, so you got to see him doing the thing that you love to see him doing, and then it told a great story and a true story. You know, an interesting story about shit that went on over in Vietnam. And even though he wasn't a soldier on the front lines, he was doing a very different kind of job. He himself, Adrian Cronauer, saw shit there. There were guys there who were just DJs who saw crazy shit. You know, I thought that was a great use of Robin Williams.
Definitely, because then you go in the beginning, it's more comedic and it gets more serious as it goes on. So you can sort of, just as you get settled into it, the dramatic scenes happen.
Yeah, and there's other fun, you know, Bruno Kirby's really funny in it, too. Mm-hmm. He's like, he's almost the comic relief. So, but well, yeah, like you said, eventually shit gets real in that movie, and it kind of catches you off guard, but you're already down for the ride, so you stick around.
He is truly, he had a career that was long enough where I think different generations will remember him for different things. One of my coworkers at work, in fact, one of my managers is a bit younger than I am. And she said, my favorite Robin Williams movie is Jumanji, which I never saw. And
yeah,
I never even read the book. Like, I don't even know what that is really, except I guess animals jump out of a board game.
Right. Yeah, pretty much that sums it up. I mean, I remember I had just moved to L.A., and that movie came out. I was working at a Blockbuster Video, and that movie had just come out in theaters. But at that time in my life, I was like, I don't have $7 to spend on a bad Robin Williams movie. Instead, I'm going to go see a bad Adam Sandler movie. And so, that one I could tell this is not going to be any good. And you know, and so then I was among that age of people who were down on it. Like, I'm not going to go see a crappy movie. But it's interesting. You say your friend, you know, they were the perfect age for that movie.
Right.
And they watch it now just the same way that I watch Mork and Mindy. You know, it reminds me of how old I was when I watched it the first time.
So it does look like Robin Williams has a few more movies coming out.
Yeah. I understand... There, from what I understand, there was a handful that got made and then a few more that they were still in pre-production. Mm. Like I heard there was talks about, they were talking about a Mrs. Doubtfire sequel.
Yes, that was in development. I don't even know if they probably just had a script or some meetings on it, but I certainly remember news stories about that. And yeah. I wouldn't mind revisiting Mrs. Doubtfire, because at the time I watched it, my parents were going through a divorce. But I haven't seen it since then, so I don't know if I would find it. It's, and you know, Robin Williams got criticized for having a lot of sentimentality, but in some of his in some of the family movies he was in, but he did such a good job of portraying someone that felt like he really cared about the lines he was reading, that he could pull it off somehow.
Yeah, he seemed to, you know, whether he did or not, it seemed like when he was, you know, really basically pouring his heart out, you thought, oh, this is something he cares about in real life. This is, you know, something he truly has strong opinions about, whether it's suicide or, you know, keeping your family together or, you know, what was that one, Man of the Year, where he ran for president, a comedian running for president?
Right.
You know, stuff like that. It was like he really believed in the message, even in toys. I remember him doing interviews for toys and talking about, yeah, it's kind of like, you know, how the war machine and the government just makes these big toys for themselves. And I was like, oh, that's a good point, you know?
Yeah.
And he really felt like he was down with this. He never you know, sleptwalked. It was never like, oh, it's just some dumbass movie I did. I remember once I saw Caddyshack, Chevy Chase talking about Caddyshack 2.
Oh, God.
Yeah. He was on Letterman, I think. And Letterman says, so tell me about Caddyshack 2. What was the deal there? And Chevy goes, ah, that's just something I did for money. It's surprising nobody, by the way.
No, I. In fact, I read Chevy Chase's, like, his authorized biography.
Yeah.
And the entire thing is full of regrets. In him, like, wishing he wouldn't have done anything. Like, it seems like the only movie he was ever proud of was the first National Lampoon's Vacation, Christmas Vacation, and then maybe the first Caddyshack. And everything else he just seems to regret, and he always blames it on the director. He classily blames European Vacation, which I admit is not a highlight of that franchise. He blames European Vacation on having a woman director who doesn't understand humor, that director being Amy Heckerling, who, lest I remind you, did Clueless, Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Comedy.
Yes. So.
Yeah, he's such a douche. But, you know, there's a perfect example. You know, every time, Robin Williams would never do something like that. Never in a million years. You couldn't pay him enough money to even say those words out loud. You know, and it was just not in his nature. And, you know, the sad thing is when Chevy Chase dies, I guarantee your Facebook page and your Twitter feed are not going to be flooded with great stories about the day I met Chevy Chase. You know what I mean?
Certainly not. I mean, even the three seasons or whatever he was on Community for, which is supposed to be a big comeback for him. Like the voicemail tapes leaked out of him trash talking everyone, and you know, I guess he'd rather be in an Old Navy commercial or a Hot Tub Time Machine 2. God.
Yeah, from what I understand, he has you know, obviously he's very acerbic, but he has this thing where he just likes to yell at people and insult them, and everyone thinks it's funny. And then one day he does it, and you realize he's not joking. Oh my God, this has taken a weird turn. And apparently that's exactly what happened on Community, and that's what happens with every movie. Sadly, you can't live your life that way, and Chevy has proven that. No one has any fucks to give about that.
I mean, maybe like 7 years ago, there was that giant 1,000-page SNL and oral history.
Yeah.
And nobody has a nice word to say about Chevy Chase except Chevy Chase.
Right.
That just speaks volumes. Yeah.
And then, oddly enough, he says one of his biggest regrets is moving out to L.A. after doing one season on SNL.
Oh.
You know, it's like, well, why don't you at least admit that you were, you know, you were wrong and they were right. And, but still, he you know, he has nothing but scorn for the people who birthed his career.
Definitely. Well, I think back to Robin Williams, I think we've had a pretty good discussion. Looking over his filmography, it seems like he contributed to almost every one of Terry Gilliam's films.
Oh, yeah.
Or most of them, at least. Maybe not Jabberwocky, but...
some of the later ones.
Yeah, some of the later ones. He even if it was just a voice or something, he'd be in there. He apparently does a voice in the new Terry Gilliam film, The Zero Theorem. And one of his last parts is, according to IMDb, playing the voice of Dennis the Dog in Absolutely Anything, a cartoon directed by Terry Jones of Monty Python fame.
Wow.
That I think all the Pythons and Simon Pegg as well have roles in.
Oh, I remember that. That was, yeah. I remember they were saying that that was when it was rumored that the Monty Python was doing another movie.
Right.
It turned out to be this, Absolutely Anything.
You know, I think it's a cartoon, but then from the credits, I'm not sure. I don't know. It has a lot of voiceover in it, at any rate. So I guess if you were to tell our listeners, Paul, if they could watch one Robin Williams film right now, let's assume they could find it, what would it be? If you had to say, you know, if you're going to sit down and pop a movie in, fire up Netflix, find something. It doesn't have to be something really on Netflix, but
yeah, well,
what would it be?
Boy, it's tough because, I mean, the best movies, his best performances are, you know, are exactly what you'd expect. Good Will Hunting and Deadpool Society are clearly his best performances, but everyone has seen those for the most part, and they're easy to see. So, I mean, being who I am, I would have to say, if you want to see a brilliant performance that you may have missed, I would say check out his episode of Homicide: Life on the Street. It's called Bop Gun. And it was directed by Barry Levinson.
Okay.
So it's like a reunion for that. In terms of movies, I would say watch Dead Again, unless, you know, you were traumatized as a child. But go ahead and watch that. He's just got one scene in the middle, but he's really good. It's a really interesting scene. Oh, and I guess if you don't have anything better to do, you can watch The Adventures of Baron Munchausen because he has a cameo in that. And that movie is ridiculous.
Sure. If I was to recommend a TV show, I would actually say just go on YouTube and look up any of his talk show appearances.
Yeah.
Because Robin Williams was just always quite funny. There was a really good clip I saw of him on a British talk show where it's him and Elijah Wood, and they're doing Jack Nicholson impersonations.
That's awesome. I remember when I was a teenager watching him on Johnny Carson, and he was on the whole episode. He was the only guest.
Wow.
Because he was so funny and he was rolling. Johnny just I heard later, Johnny was like, no, let's do another segment with him. And then he would kill it, and he's like, let's do another. And he killed every segment and every guest. Every other guest got bumped that night. And I watched it live, and at the time I was in high school going, wow, were there no other guests tonight? And then later on it was like a best of show, or maybe it was in the Johnny's, you know, when he retired, they showed a clip of it and said, yeah, this night Robin was on a roll, and we let him go the whole show. So, I mean, if you want to watch that, that's an hour of Robin Williams making Johnny Carson laugh. And it really is amazing. You know, when you think about it, what if you went on it, you know, somebody goes on a talk show and they have two other guests booked. How funny does that person have to be for them to go, forget it?
Right.
Not only are we bumping the comedian or singer who's at the end, but we're also bumping the other celebrity we had coming on. You know, they won't get to talk about their movie or TV show or whatever, you know, their celebrity, their sports team, whatever they're doing. They bumped the whole rest of the show, any comedy bits, everything. It was just Robin Williams. And when you watch it, you go, oh my God, I understand why they did that, because he's killing it for an hour. It's the best version of that Robin Williams you will ever see.
I'll have to look that up after we finish recording the show. That sounds great. If I was to recommend a movie, I'd recommend one of his later ones people might not have seen. He did a film, World's Greatest Dad, directed by Bobcat Goldthwait, where the subject matter happens to be suicide again. But it's a really interesting movie in that there's funny stuff to the performance, there's serious stuff to the performance, and even Bobcat Goldthwait has a small cameo in the film. But it's a very different sort of take on a father-son relationship set at a high school. So I'd recommend World's Greatest Dad. But you have to be in the mood for something heavy, because it's not the light and breezy flavor of Robin Williams. Well, thanks for coming on for this, Paul. I felt it was important to do a show dedicated to Robin Williams. And before I let you go, I want you to humor me. I'm going to send you a link. I don't know if you've seen this. This was a commercial that Robin Williams did with his daughter, Zelda Williams, for a Legend of Zelda video game. And I want
that's hilarious.
And I want you to watch it and just get your reaction. He named his daughter Zelda after the video game, by the way.
Actually, it was his son.
His son did. That's right. Okay.
Yeah, they let their son name her, and he named her Zelda after the video game. You want me to watch it right now?
Yeah, just watch it right now. We'll get your reaction. But it's a very sweet commercial.
The first time I saw you, I knew we'd be linked forever. For you, I traveled to the four corners of the world. I faced adversity. I became a hero.
Dad.
I saved your kingdom.
Dad.
Yes, Zelda?
Are you mixing me up with the princess again?
Hard to say. You're both pretty magical.
Oh, that's lovely. I didn't even know what she looked like. I've never even seen her before.
She
was in one of his movies. Some movie where he played a mentally challenged person. I know that doesn't narrow it down. might have been August Rush. Is that right? Doesn't matter. Anyway, they were acting in some movie. I think she's an actress. I think recently, because she's on Twitter and all this stuff, and Instagram, she was bombarded by so much messages that she's had to publicly announce she's taking a break from social media for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say I blame her. You know, obviously, that's going to happen anytime, someone dies, the haters come out, and they want to get a rise out of you. So I don't blame her. It's pretty awful stuff, but it's best just to ignore it, really.
Right, and then, of course, I can't imagine. She's going to have... Anytime, you know, whether she remains an actress or whatever she does with her career, she's always going to be asked, what did you think when you found out your father died?
Right.
That's always going to come up in interviews. I can't imagine.
Yeah, it's funny because you think about other performers like that, like Freddie Prinze Jr., you know.
Right.
His dad did the exact same thing, only much younger.
Yes.
Freddie Prinze was a brilliant comedian who had his own sitcom.
That's right.
And eventually he couldn't handle fame, and he got addicted to drugs to try to manage his mood disorders, and he couldn't take it, and he shot himself in the head. And I guess, luckily, Freddie Prinze Jr. was just a baby at the time.
Hmm.
So he tells people, I never even knew my dad. I know him just as well as you did from clips and videos. So questions you ask me are a complete waste of time. And that's why nobody ever asks him anything about his dad. But sadly, she, you know, will not have that luxury.
No, I mean, it's like Weird Al Yankovic gets all the questions about his parents accidentally died of carbon monoxide poisoning.
Right.
And he gets the question all the time. And he was on Mark Maron's WTF podcast. And he was I wasn't watching it. But you could tell he was annoyed at having to go over that that topic yet again.
Yeah, obviously it's not something you want to talk about in the first place, but it's certainly not a story you want to tell over and over again.
Sure.
And unfortunately, people, especially reporters these days, are too lazy or too stupid or both to know better than to ask that question.
Yeah, there has to be time for just respect and celebrate the way they lived.
Right.
And to stop beating a dead horse. Oh, wait, that's not the best metaphor, but... any last Robin Williams thoughts?
Just that, it's, I'm a comedian, and I deal with depression, and, I'm an old man as well, and I've had thoughts of suicide plenty of times in my life, but luckily, and I really mean this, luckily I had at least one good friend who was there for me, who, just did the simple things like take me out to a movie or just give me a call and say, how you doing? And, we don't think about how important those small gestures are, but they really are important, and even to... a big star like Robin Williams, who's universally adored, he still felt like he was alone. So, obviously we've heard it a million times, but it's really important that if you can take anything from this, it's not to take people in your life for granted and, let them know how important, not just how important they are to you, but how important they are in general. It's nice to make people feel important, and Robin Williams did that so much, I think, because he was looking for that from other people. But, we can take a lesson from that.
Definitely. I was somewhat comforted to see news that all the amount of calls they've been getting at the 1-800 suicide hotline numbers have skyrocketed since the story of Robin Williams passing. So... yeah, it brings that dialogue out in the open, which is very important.
Absolutely.
On the other hand, you get some jackass journalist or like BuzzFeed that happens to do this probably isn't BuzzFeed, but I saw some headline. I have news going on at work I like to check on, and there's a headline like, "Why do comedians keep on killing themselves?" I was like, really? Is that the best you can do?
Wow. Yeah.
But
so,
no, Robin Williams.
So
brilliant, such a great career. He is loved. He will be loved. He will be remembered.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
Hello, listeners of the Sequel Cast. This is William.
And Jersey Jason.
Who is back with us? Although, I suppose not in the most joyous of circumstances, as it's news now. Robin Williams has passed away, and so we've decided to do. A tribute episode. I want to thank Matt for letting us be a part of it. And I don't know, Jason and I have a lot to talk about, because as comedy nerds, Robin Williams has had an influence on us, and we've been exposed to a lot of his filmography.
Also, as a theater geek and as an appreciator of film, seeing his contribution to really culture, really, when a celebrity dies, you look back at their career and you see the things that first attracted you to them, as well as just the pure talent, and all that stuff really comes to a head when they pass, because you're remembering them for what they brought to your life and what we've lost by the passing of really a great comedic force.
Yeah, and I not to get kind of too morbid, but I honestly thought that if Robin Williams was going to die before his time, it was going to be because of drugs.
I never really heard the drug angle before. You were telling me about Belushi.
Well, yeah, this came from a documentary about Robin Williams I saw many years ago. But the short of it is that back in the 80s, when John Belushi passed away of a drug overdose, he and Robin Williams were really good friends. And the story goes that night, when Robin Williams learned that Belushi had died of a drug overdose, he had a drug habit at the time, but he had a panic attack because he did not want to leave the world that way. In that moment, he saw a possible end coming, and he worked to get clean. Now, it's my understanding, though, that, you know, he did on again, off again, did have drugs in his life. Whether that has anything to do with the circumstances of his passing now, you know, I don't know. But addiction is a strange thing.
Well, also, so is depression. Some of the signs of suicidal tendencies and some of the signs that you might be able to see is a person withdrawing from their life or feeling that they aren't connected to that same community. Also being feeling that you are cut off from your family. These things can lead to that depression. There are also signs that a person is kind of shutting down because they're not actively seeking those things out. Then it comes to one of the third signs of a possible suicidal tendency, that the person feels that they are a burden to those around them due to anything from illness, age, any kind of emotional baggage. If they feel that, for some people, they feel that it's less dramatic to commit suicide than it is to go and get treatment. And for a lot of people, they see that as an easy way out. And I'm here to tell you, it isn't the easy way out. It's easy because you don't have to worry about anything after you do it, but it's so the weaker thing to do. It takes a person to have such strength to be able to work through those emotions, to seek help. And frankly, I have to say, kind of a, not disclaimer, something I'd like to stress is if you are having feelings like these, seek help. Talk to people. Whether it's talk therapy or actual medical treatment, go and get it, because that shows how strong you are and that you are stronger than the disease. A lot of people, they are able to hide the struggle, the stress, the darkness that might be inside. I mean, a great actor like Philip Seymour Hoffman, who had this great ability to be up and then also had a dark side that he was hiding from a lot of people. He had suffered drugs as well, and they eventually took his life. And we can't know what was going through Robin Williams' head in terms of stress, in terms of internal thoughts that possibly drove him to sadly end his life. But again, I would ask that anybody listen to this, if you are in a circumstance, seek help. Will, would you mind?
As a community service, there is a National Suicide Prevention hotline. You know, if you don't know who to reach out to, you know, they are there waiting to be reached out to. It's 1-800-273-8255 is the number for the National Suicide Prevention hotline. But now, having said that, you know, we are here to celebrate Robin Williams with all the ups and downs that his career has had. It's been a very heady ride.
And also how it's touched us. I mean, yeah, we talk about sequels. How many sequels was he in?
Oh gosh. Well, there's
I can only think of the Aladdin series.
Yeah, he was in the third Aladdin movie, and we did cover the Aladdin films on the sequel cast. He was in Night at the Museum 2.
Weren't they gonna do a Mrs. Doubtfire 2?
A Mrs. Doubtfire. There were several films that Robin Williams had completed filming, including a Night at the Museum 3. There was a Mrs. Doubtfire 2 that was in development, but as I understand it, all that exists for that movie are like two drafts of the script. Mm.
They'll get Jamie Kennedy to do the sequel.
Yeah, they'll get Jamie Kennedy. He'll put on that green mask and swirl around, and he'll become Mrs. Doubtfire.
Oh!
I think, you know, that's actually another thing, is just all the movies that Robin Williams didn't do, either because he didn't get a chance to do because his life has been cut short, or just because those movies didn't happen. He was one of the comedians up for the part of the Joker in Batman, in Tim Burton's Batman, and that would have been amazing. There was also a Superman movie in development for ages where Robin Williams had been approached for the role of Brainiac. I would see him more as a Mr. Mixes Piddalick, but that would have been a weird movie.
I would have loved... I always said this. I think, actually, did we talk about this when we covered Batman? I wanted to see Robin Williams as the Mad Hatter.
He would have been a good Mad Hatter. Actually, now that I think about it, because Robin Williams could do creepy, he does an amazingly subdued and creepy performance in 1 Hour Photo. Oh. If he had brought that energy to Brainiac, he would have been a menacing alien.
And there's
computer.
Another movie called Final Cut, as well as Insomnia. Insomnia, he plays a sociopath psychopath who wants to be liked after he's like killed a girl. And he's trying to become friends with the lead investigator, Al Pacino.
When were you first exposed to Robin Williams?
I don't remember if it was Mork and Mindy.
The first thing I consciously remember seeing Robin Williams in was Mork and Mindy.
I almost want to say it might have been Popeye.
Hmm.
It's got to be one of those two.
Well, it was funny, like that, because we're looking at his filmography, and like Popeye is like his second film, like his second major film role, and like right off the bat, and I mean no disrespect, but right off the bat, he's in like a middling family comedy.
Oh.
Although that being said,
that was but his Popeye, I thought was sublime and beautiful.
It's a good Popeye. Well, that's something a lot of people don't know about Popeye. It is more true to the Popeye source material than the Fleischer Popeye cartoons, which is the version of Popeye that everyone's familiar with. The character Popeye originally appeared in a long-running comic strip called Thimble Theater, which was kind of a lightly comic soap opera that took place in this down-on-its-luck seaside town. And Popeye was this sailor who got blown in by a storm who was looking for his long-lost father. And that is what that movie was based on. That's why they all live in those... That's why it's like a shanty town on stilts, is that pier community. That's why everything is kind of somber. That's why the quest of him trying to find Poop Deck Pappy is so important to that movie. It's all taken from the Thimble Theater source material. Oh, but actually, speaking of Mork and Mindy, I think one of the biggest like comedic debts I owe to Robin Williams is through Mork and Mindy. He introduced me to Jonathan Winters, and it's like Jonathan Winters and Robin Williams are probably the two. Actually, and Greg Proops are probably the three most influential improvisational comedians that have influenced me.
There's a clip online. If you can throw this on, Matt, if you can throw the audio, there's a great interview on Johnny Carson where it's Robin Williams in an awful suit sitting next to Jonathan Winters, and they're basically playing off each other.
I'm sorry.
Could we have those sent out and clean for you?
It was easy getting them on. And now, here, you want to play with those?
Oh, yeah. This way I won't have so much guilt.
One of the things that Robin Williams actually said about Jonathan Winters is Jonathan Winters taught him that the world is there for him to play in, which is why you see kind of people would call him like a manic. And also he kind of got labeled manic depressive, which he wasn't. He was not clinically manic depressive, but because of his manic personality, people only saw it when he acted out and acted up with the characters and stuff. But he also could be very subdued at times. And Jonathan Winters was the same way. Jonathan Winters, if you give him a chance, he plays with people. He has the freedom to play with reality around him. I actually heard Robin Williams call him a living hallucination.
Huh.
And that was one of the things that he tried to do in his early stand-up. Because he had learned about Jonathan... He had watched Jonathan Winters on TV before he was even into acting. Back when he was in a private high school. An all-boys high school. And later on got to work with Jonathan Winters. Very impressive. But you can kind of see that they are those same type of comedians where you learn to just go with it. You get to play with the audience. What?
Aim your voice at the computer.
Oh. You get to play with the audience. That's what Robin Williams is always to me. It was somebody who could just just do whatever. He could be wacky, and he could be this personality, but then also seeing him in serious roles blew my mind away. The World According to Garth, I think, I'm trying to think if that was the first ever serious role. I think Good Morning Vietnam was the first serious role I ever saw him in.
Well, I'd say it's probably the that was a good dramatic role, and yet it's a dramatic role about a funny man in a terrible circumstances.
But I love The World According to Garp because he's not purposely funny. The character has to deal with a cheating wife, the death of a child, his own mother, and his nervousness around sex. It's a good book, but it's a brilliant movie, and he really brings humanity to that character. You know what? I wonder if it was Dead Poets Society. Dead Poets Society might have been the first serious movie.
Did you saw him in?
Yeah. Because, again, like people think of him as a comedian, but like some of the serious roles he played were really wonderful, strong characters.
Yeah, I guess I think the Dead Poets Society is certainly one that a lot of people point to. That's definitely one of his most well-known dramatic pieces. Though going back to his comedy pieces, because I'd been introduced to Robin Williams through Mork and Mindy, but what really kind of got me to appreciate and respect Robin Williams was that that live stand-up comedy special that he filmed for HBO.
Oh, yeah.
It was like the late 70s, early 80s, that used to rerun. There was like a period like in the early 90s where that just reran on Comedy Central constantly. Mm-hmm. And I watched it from the beginning to end every time. And despite the fact that it's all filmed and I've seen that 100 times, it still feels spontaneous every time I see it. And it's just like, it's just him dicking around and goofing off on stage, but it's the funniest thing in the world.
Like a testicle. No, the sun like a testicle hangs low in the sky.
The moon like a testicle hangs low in the sky. And we shall toast to the days when chickens had lips.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's just, you know, weird free association. I love that. I love that whole thing where, like, he's the old man talking about, like, looking back and, like, that's, like, one of my favorite jokes. Y'all remember World War III? All 47 seconds of it? And that bit where he has that whole monologue about, oh, ain't no government in the world knows how to handle madness. So you gotta stay a little bit crazy. Stay a little bit crazy. Nobody can control you. And I think that's very true. You know, we are not reasonable beings. We are beings capable of reason. And yet, glorious and divine nonsense, I think, has done far more good in the world than reason ever has.
But you know what, speaking about that? How fucking great. Matt, cut this in. His speech from Good Will Hunting. Now, it was worked on. It was a script, and he saw how brilliant it was, and he was nominated for Best Supporting Actor for his role in Good Will Hunting.
You've never looked at a woman and been totally vulnerable. Known someone that could level you with her eyes. Feeling like God put an angel on earth just for you. Who could rescue you from the depths of hell. And you wouldn't know what it's like to be her angel. To have that love for her be there forever, through anything.
I think one of my favorite performances of all time is also, that's also in one of my overall favorite movies, The Adventures of Baron Munchausen, when he plays the King of the Moon.
Which he wasn't even supposed to be. That was supposed to be Sean Connery.
That is yet another role that was supposed to go to Sean Connery, and then went to somebody else.
He was friends with Eric Idle, because they both loved the Tour de France, and he just happened to be in the area, because he had come to visit Eric Idle. And the director, Terry Gilliam, basically said, okay, Sean's not showing up. Hey, Robin, you want to jump in? And my favorite thing about that is Robin Williams actually helped Uma Thurman, because one of the actresses, this older woman, was like kind of, she was jealous of how pretty and how much attention Uma Thurman was getting, so she kept stepping over Uma Thurman into her sight line, and Robin Williams stepped on the lady's dress so that she couldn't get in the way of Uma Thurman getting closer to the camera. And I remember Eric Idle telling that story, and it's just like the kind of love and wit that I feel that, again, I didn't know him, but I feel that Robin Williams was capable of.
Well, that's one way to handle distress. Oof. Oh, yes, fantastic, wonderful. Oh, And that is just a sampling of my abysmal Robin Williams impersonation, which has been not delighting audiences for years on the sequel cast.
But also, speaking of impressions, he did a bunch of impressions.
Oh, Lord,
yeah. His Groucho Marx was good.
He's one of the few people that can do a good Groucho Marx.
Looking at Aladdin, pretending to be all those characters. Like, he does a really good Bob Hope. He doesn't do the cliche Bob Hope.
Boy, howdy. How's everybody doing? Grrr, that one.
Yeah, he doesn't do the grrr.
I'm not sure if Robin Williams ever... I'm not sure if Bob Hope ever did the grrr.
No, that's the whole point.
Well, yeah, it's one of those impersonations that nobody... Like, Edward G. Robinson never went, nyarr. But, like, it's a cartoony sound effect that somehow purposefully sums up an actual person.
Like Nixon and Haru.
Haru, yeah. Or Dick Cheney and meh.
Now that one's true.
Oh, that's true. He is the Penguin.
That's the sound of him having a heart attack.
Born to the name Oswald Cobblepot. He had to change his name to Cheney. Somehow came up with a name more horrifying. Anyway, but back to Robin Williams.
Yeah, because he did voices for cartoons. Was Aladdin, was that after or before Mrs. Doubtfire?
That was before, because that's the thing. Like, Robin Williams has had these amazing peaks and these very deep troughs in his career, and I believe Aladdin came as like right at the beginning of one of his comebacks. That was in 1992. The previous film he had done had been Toys and Hook, which had been bombs.
Fucking love Hook.
I'm going to disagree with you on Hook. Now, I'm willing to rewatch it now with adult eyes, but I did not like that movie when it came out.
Oh my god, I love that movie.
I found it to be trite. As a child, I found it to be trite and felt that it had squandered what would otherwise have been a brilliant premise.
No, I thought it was beautiful. Bob Hoskins, actually, one of the things they talked about, him and Gene... No, not Gene Hackman.
Dustin Hoffman?
Dustin Hoffman, thank you. They actually... It came out... that I believe Bob Hoskins said it, is that he played Smee and Captain Hook as if they were gay lovers.
Huh, that is a neat angle.
Yeah, so watch it again, guys, with that in mind.
But yeah, like, Hook and Toys were bombs. Fisher King is a great
movie. I love Toys, too.
Fisher King is a great movie, but it's kind of, but it's obscure. That's another Gilliam, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. But then Aladdin hit right at the beginning of a big upswing. He did Fern Gully, which I don't know if that was a big box office success, but I find that Fern Gully is very well loved. And then, you know, Mrs. Doubtfire and had a whole string of hits during
But also
that
in that, he plays a voice actor.
Yeah, Robin Williams plays a voice actor who tries to reconnect with his kids by dressing as a woman.
And my favorite part of that, remember when he's calling the number a whole bunch of times as different people?
You know, one of my favorite
name is Peg.
What?
My name is Peg. Oh, can you come in? My name is Peg.
Yeah, I'm great with kids, you know. Barry, you keep it down. Don't make me get the hose. But yeah, like that is... Mad Magazine, they did their Mrs. Doubtfire parody, just had like the best observation that there was absolutely no reason why he had to spend what is apparently a week's worth of time prank calling his ex-wife with these fake job applications when he could have just called as Mrs. Doubtfire the first time and gotten a job interview. Mm-hmm. Like, he's really trying to demoralize his ex-wife.
And when he's doing the different characters in the in Harvey Fierstein's in the chair, and they're trying to figure out the look.
Oh, God.
Oh, he does Babs. He does Barbara Streisand.
He does like the Latina voice.
Lots
of good voice work in that.
But yeah, like, that's the thing that he's known as, for having this coterie of characters in his head. And there are some people that I know don't like how manic he is and how he expresses all these different ideas. And there have been times that I've been like, there were times that I was like, oh, this is kind of annoying. It's like, can you tone it down, Robin?
Well, the thing that I find, and I've seen this in a lot of comedians, that, you know, Robin Williams can bring forth so much energy and can improv so well and be so far over the place that there are a lot of directors who don't know how to handle that, and that they'll trust Robin Williams to improvise and to bring that energy, but they won't do anything to harness that energy. Like one of the movies that he was in, Robots, which I think could have been a very good movie, but it has a lot of faults, and one of them is Robin Williams' performance. They clearly
had Robots, Millennium Man.
No, Robots, where he plays the red robot. Ewan McGregor's in it.
Oh,
because one of the worst parts of that movie is Robin Williams' character, and I don't think it's Robin Williams' fault. They clearly had him improvise without giving him any real direction, and then failed to edit his best material together. It feels like they just tried to throw every joke he made up on the spot into that movie, and it does sadly drag it down.
And yet it works with Aladdin.
Well, but again, I think with Aladdin, I think some of that stuff was coached because they knew they had certain things they really wanted to animate. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, he's recording so much material, they're cutting it down so it's just the best material.
True. But I did hear they had to go back and reanimate stuff because of how funny they found it in the recording.
Oh, yeah. But I think that's good. I mean, that's why it worked for Aladdin, but I felt held Robots back.
Man, but that, and speaking of robots, though, Millennium Man.
Oh, Bicentennial Man.
Bicentennial.
Based on some material by Isaac Asimov.
And sadly, that's wrong because they weren't using his acting talent to the fullest. Like, he had to act like an emotionless machine, and that's the same problem with Heartbeats.
Oh yeah, taking a dynamic, two amazing dynamic performers like Bernadette Peters and Andy Kaufman, and then have them play emotionless robots.
Yeah,
that's a casting against type that does not work. Oh, and I will say this: it's probably a forgotten movie now, but I think Robin Williams is very charming in Flubber.
Oh yeah, I don't know why I went Satchmo there for a second.
Oh yeah,
Flubber,
talking
man.
Flubber.
Not that one.
Flying Rubber Baby.
God. Oh, wait, there's another one that I love. What's it called? The History of Being Me, Go Up. Go back to, like, early 90s, I think.
Early 90s.
The Story of Being Human. Being Human. Oh, my God, that's another serious movie that comes, like, from fucking nowhere. Huh. Oh, God, okay. So Being Human, it's him playing six different men through time, all named Hector, and it's a deconstruction of what it is to be human in these different times. At one time, he plays a Roman slave who him and John Turturro have to agree to murder their master, but then also commit suicide because, of course, they'll be crucified for it. And it's like during this big, like, I want to say Rome was burning at the time, but there's a beautiful one where he plays an Irish or a Scot on the road to somewhere, maybe in Spain, doing a pilgrimage, and he meets an Italian woman. And she doesn't speak English, and he doesn't speak Italian, but they have, like, this tryst, and they have sex on the side of the road, and they find the body of a boy who they thought was watching them, and they give him a proper burial. And they finally get to her village, and he's like, I have to leave, I have to go home. And he can't express this after meeting her family, because she's a widowed woman. And it's just, oh God, the torment in some of the characters that he plays in that. There's some beautiful humanity there. But it's, again, one of those movies that not a lot of people know about.
Oh, and actually, that's one thing about Robin Williams, because people do expect him to be all over the place. Like, there are times where he's done, like, subtle performances where nobody knows it's him. I remember AI, Artificial Intelligence, which I understand why people don't like that film. I understand and accept that completely. I do, however, enjoy it quite a bit. But Robin Williams, thank you for ruining this tribute.
Sorry.
But Robin Williams plays the character Dr. No, who is this, like, hologram character of Albert Einstein who dispenses information. And I remember when I saw AI in the theaters, and when Dr. No was on screen, everybody, like, I kept hearing all over the theater people mumbling, "I recognize that voice. Who is that? I don't know." And then when the credits began and they saw Robin Williams as Dr. No, everyone's like, "Oh!" Because, you know, when he is subtle, when he is toned down, when he is using, I kind of call it like the good father voice, you don't know it's him unless you really know Robin Williams.
Mm. Another weird movie, What Dreams May Come. Weird. Yeah. Kind of trying to construct and give a hopeful dream of what heaven is. And trying to show the connections that we make in life continue over to the other side. Very weird story of somebody passing over and what heaven becomes to them. But then also trying to reach out to another person who's died. And oddly enough in that, it's the wife who commits suicide and goes to, for lack of a better word, hell. And he travels there to get her, and there's a point where he might get trapped in his own emotions in hell, because that's what hell is. It's reliving the worst part and all the depression, all the misery in life that you had, especially because of her committing suicide, that is basically all the emotions. You're not released from those emotions. They follow you to death. It's very, very, very dark.
Now, I love Death to Smoochie, and I absolutely love Robin Williams' performance.
Great performance.
He's playing an evil version of himself. Just this guy who in front of the cameras is like funny and charming, but then once he's out of the camera, just becomes this evil, greedy, emotionally unbalanced psychotic who would rather set himself on fire in Times Square when he gets fired off of his children's TV show than try to rebuild his career. It's this crazy, it's this just brilliantly crazy performance as Rainbow Randall.
Well, it also shows that all those kiddie show people are terrible.
Well, yeah, I love the idea of the CD background of all children's entertainment.
What does he call that one girl who was the fangirl? She's like an executive producer, but she was a fangirl. Was it a fluffer fucker?
No, it was like a fluff fucker or mask something. But like a person who is sexually attracted to children's show hosts. Was it Edward Norton as Smoochie? And
yep. Yeah,
they played off of each other pretty well.
Edward Norton was so good in that too, and that's another one was like. He can be this like light, he can be like a dark figure, but then also this light, happy, kind of hippie-ish character.
And Jon Stewart, that's an awesome
yeah.
that movie.
And Danny DeVito, right?
Yeah. Well, I believe he produced, didn't he? No, he directed
And
that.
Harvey Fierstein's in that too. Oh, how many things have Harvey Fierstein and Robin Williams been in together?
Wasn't quite a bit. Actually, speaking of things, I saw footage of this, and I don't know if a full version of this exists anywhere, but Robin, in I believe it was the mid-90s, it might have been the late 90s, Robin Williams and Billy Crystal starred in a Broadway production of Waiting for Godot. And they didn't change the dialogue or anything, they just performed it as if it were a comedy, and like would do the lines, but would also do bits. And there's this great scene where, like, you know, the slave comes out and gives that whole long monologue, and Robin Williams and Billy Crystal get bored with the monologue and walk off stage and just start mingling with the audience while the monologue's going on. And, like, they steal people's programs and start looking things up, and they try to figure out how long it's going on. They steal someone's seat. They steal people's popcorn. I don't know why you'd have popcorn Waiting for Godot, but why not? But it was hilarious. Also, there was a bit they did where, like, while people were talking, they kept, like, trading hats. They kept, like, doing this weird thing, shuffling hats between themselves and one other person. It was great material.
That's also another thing to really hit on is the comic relief. How many years did they host that? It was Whoopi Goldberg, Billy Crystal, and Robin Williams, and they hosted for at least over, I'm going to say, 8 years.
Oh yeah, they did that for ages, and that was good. And that was good material. Like back in the dark ages of cable. I mean, that's what I would watch late at night after SNL. They would show reruns of Comic Relief, and it was good comedy, but it was also like very earnest. Like when they would do the appeal for charity, I didn't feel like they were pandering. I felt like Robin Williams, Whoopi Goldberg, and Billy Crystal were being completely honest and were doing an earnest outreach.
I always felt bad. I always felt like Whoopi Goldberg always was trying to keep a leash on Robin Williams, both of them, because they were like, they would be all kind of like, they'd be standing still, and he'd be going crazy manic over the stage. And I'm like, Robin, stop. I remember that much. Oh, man. I remember when he had, you know what just came into my mind?
What's that?
His daughter Zelda.
What about his daughter Zelda?
Well, he was married 3 times. How many kids did he have?
Enough. I will assume that he had enough.
But I remember, do you remember that commercial that he made where he talked about the hero's journey?
No, I don't think I saw that.
Oh my God, it's kind of beautiful. It was when he was doing a piece on Broadway where he played a tiger from the Baghdad Zoo. If I'm wrong, corrections and omissions, please get back to me. But he played a tiger, and during the time he was on, he grew this beard, and it was a really epic, cool beard. But he also did this commercial for The Legend of Zelda, where he talked about the hero's journey, and how, in like the princess and everything, and then it just zoomed, it came out to his face, and him talking to his daughter, who he loved The Legend of Zelda so much, he named her Zelda after the game.
Oh, wow.
And it's this absolutely beautiful commercial, and you see the love that he must have had for his children. And it's a warm fuzzy feeling. Go ahead and watch it.
And actually, another thing like that, there was a sort of dramatized documentary in search of Dr. Seuss, where it was a reporter walking through different Dr. Seuss stories and like learning about Dr. Seuss from his characters. Christopher Lloyd's in it. Billy Crystal's in the World War II section where it talks about, you know, his work with the Navy, but and the private snafu shorts. But there's the segment where they get to the Cat in the Hat. Rather than going into too much detail about the origin of the Cat in the Hat, they just cut to Robin Williams in a child's bedroom reading the Cat in the Hat to these two girls. I don't know if those girls were his own daughters, but it's really great, and he's got a puppet of the goldfish. And it's a really good reading of one of my favorite children's stories.
Hey, Will, can you look this up? Was Robin Williams in Rock and Roll Through Mother Goose?
No, he was in Fairy Tale Theater as the Frog Prince, which is another great performance. And actually, I rewatched that last year. Fairy Tale Theater, Shelley Duvall's Fairy Tale Theater, ended up on an online video streaming service that my fiance and I subscribed to, and that's the very first segment, which I think might have actually been a pilot that she did collaboratively with Robin Williams. And like, it's full of like good written material, but also good Robin Williams lines, because like, if I don't know if you've ever seen those, but those sets are cheap, and there's lots of, but in a good, cool, like family theater sort of way, and there's all these backdrops, and there's this one horrible backdrop in The Frog Prince where there's like a spiral staircase painted under the backdrop. It looks really awkward, and he even makes a comment. He's like talking about the decorations in the palace, and oh, that staircase, I love it, early perpendicular. And it's just a great line that I didn't get as a kid, but as an adult really knocks me out.
Art school.
We should write a song about that. Art school. Where's my money?
Art school. What did I learn in art school?
No, I like where's my money. But we'll see. But seriously, where's my money? All right. Oh, wow.
Oh, now, speaking of money, one of the things that I had heard, I do not know if this is true. Correct me if I'm wrong. I heard that he had been working nonstop for the last 20 months. And he might have been at the point of exhaustion.
I don't know, but I mean, I know for my own creative endeavors, I kind of go through periods where I do absolutely nothing or absolutely everything, and I have no middle ground.
I want to know what he was working on, actually.
Well, actually, I guess we'll end it, or move into ending our part of this tribute by going into this. There are the three films that he completed principal photography for that are coming out is a holiday movie, Merry Friggin' Christmas. And then after that, there's Night at the Museum 3, Secret of the Tomb, where he's again reprising his role of Theodore Roosevelt. And actually, I got it. Theodore Roosevelt probably is my favorite U.S. president. Maybe even my favorite president. he actually does a really good performance as Theodore Roosevelt. And then he's the voice of an animated dog in the movie Absolutely Anything.
Now, the Night at the Museum, I know, and I do like his portrayal in that. I don't know any of the other ones. I did hear about The Angriest Man in Brooklyn. Heard that's actually not... I heard it was all right.
Yeah, I believe that that's looking for a distributor. It will probably get one very quickly now.
Mm.
But yeah, there's a lot of good Robin Williams material out there. You know, and as a comedy nerd, I know I'm going to be watching it. You know, until I pass on into whatever awaits me.
He had a long career, and hopefully a piece of his career touched you as much as it touched us. I'm going to definitely go back and revisit some of my favorite performances of him. I'm just very sad I won't be able to see anything anything new forthcoming from him.
Yeah, I say if you want to do your own tribute, just, you know, find some good work of his to watch. You know, I heartily recommend Aladdin, the HBO comedy special. Oh, if you can track it down, and I think it may very well be on YouTube, the episode of Whose Line Is It Anyway that he did the guest appearance on back when he had the bleach blonde hair.
What's going through Robin Williams' mind right now? Why am I doing this? I have a career.
That's good. Was that a Colin Mockery line?
No, that was a line that Robin Williams actually did.
Oh, that was
two
his
camera.
Line.
He went and did it two camera.
Excellent. Oh, two camera. Yes. Oh, yeah. Fantastic. Wonderful.
One camera, two camera.
Red camera, blue camera.
See, I can't do an impression of him.
We're taking photographs of Japan with a giant turtle camera. anyway, so for fun.
Oh, let us remember him in fun.
Yeah. So, for our segment in the Sequel Cast Robin Williams tribute special, this has been Thrasher
and Jersey Jason.
And keep enjoying good films. Life's too short for bad movies.
Sequel Cast Special is a Hipster Goblin production.